Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Teresa. And we're talking with the people who are growing, raising, harvesting, and producing food here in our beautiful coastal region.
And also to those who are selling, cooking, serving, and eating the freshest food available in our communities.
Join us today in a conversation about what's in season right now here on the North Coast.
Today we are talking with local fisherman Garth Porcher and Oregon Sea Grant Seafood Product Development Specialist Mark Whittem.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hey.
Great to have you guys on. Garth, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I moved to the Astoria area 3 years ago. I actually moved here because the salmon season was severely restricted in southern Oregon for a couple years back-to-back, so this was sort of the only game in town for my little boat since it's mostly a salmon vessel.
How long have you been fishing?
I've been fishing full-time for the last 11 years, and I think I started when I was about 8 with my dad in Alaska. And I would fish with him in the summertime, off and on. And, I've had my own boat for, well, since the fall of 2004.
Great.
And, it's actually kind of funny because I bought the boat in Coos Bay, spent most of the time fishing it down there, and then when I brought it up here, the boat was actually built here on the Columbia River in the 30s.
Wow.
So it's kind of like bringing the boat back to where it came from.
Well, that's great.
That's nice.
Mark, can you tell us a little bit about what you do? I mean, what is a seafood product development specialist?
Well, this position is designed to support the commercial food industry, seafood production, new entrepreneurs starting up. Basically, it does commercial food production from recipe development to scale up and then getting it into full production.
Well, and are you from around here?
No, I took this job. I've been here about 5 years. I joined Oregon Sea Grant. I initially had a shared position between Oregon Sea Grant and the Seafood Consumer Center. I came here from the Valley. I was working for a company in the Valley called Rain Suite. I was a manager of a tech services and product development for a berry processing company.
Oh, wow. And somewhere back there in time, I think I heard you say you were a blueberry farmer?
Oh, yeah. We had, before that, I worked for a company called Chef Francisco that eventually became Heinz. And during that time, I was there 12 years, and we planted and started a commercial blueberry farm. Planted it, built a house, ran the thing for 18 years. It was a pretty small acreage, just 4 acres, but it was a 100-acre farm, and we leased out the rest of it. But 4 acres of blueberries and an acre of raspberries is quite a bit of work.
Yeah, I bet. And where was that?
That was in Harrisburg.
Harrisburg, okay.
Ended up the last probably 8 to 10 years, pretty much sold all our own fruit at farmers markets throughout the state.
Wow.
It's an interesting transition from berries to seafood. And I know, Garth, you were saying earlier that you also had some blueberries in your past.
Yeah, I lived on the East Coast for a few years and would actually go to Maine to rake the low bush blueberries in the summertime.
It's an interesting combination, and I've had recently some lovely berry sauces on fish, so I always think of those as being a nice combination for consuming as well. And they both do so well here on the North Coast. So, Garth, why don't you tell us a little bit about the fish, how you fish on your boat? I know it's kind of unique and probably not what most people think of as commercial fishing now.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes and no. People have lots of different ideas about commercial, and there are, mm-hmm. there's of course lots of different ways to go about it depending on what license or type of vessel you have, what species you're targeting. My vessel's it's a salmon troller,
mm-hmm.
which is means you're traveling through the water, towing individual hooks up to, with my boat, you can, you know, without trying to avoid tangles and stuff like that. The more gear you have in the water, the different, you know, more chance you have for problems. So I don't usually tow more than about 20 hooks at a time. Some larger boats that have, you know, more space with the spread of their poles, different things come into play, but they can tow more hooks. So the fish are all caught, you know, individually, even if you, you know, if you have 2 or 3 bite, say at the same time, and everything starts shaking, you're still only dealing with one fish at a time. It's a real, it's, I don't know. Some people, as far as the commercial fishing aspect of it, it's kind of like sport fishing on a large scale to a certain degree. You know, you're trying to trick the fish into biting one hook.
Yeah.
So, know, which is in the commercial fishing kind of in the overall industry, lots of fisheries are designed to just capture the fish instead of trick them into, you know, there are some, to, you know, albacore trolling is the same.
It's a little bit more sport to what you're doing.
Well, it's not, I mean, it's just there's a, you're actually trying to trick the fish instead of herd them into an area or funnel them
and
into
then capture them
or,
in a net. So you're not using nets in your...
No, I mean, well, that would be, it's a, my boat's only 28 feet. Like, if you tried to tow a net from it, you'd sink it. Or it'd be a really, really small net, you know, it wouldn't, you know.
And do you freeze the fish on
board? No, I, there's, my boat is really, since it is so small, the space is really limited, and I actually do a traditional belly ice pack with the fish once they're dressed. Each fish gets individually bled and then dressed before it goes down on the ice. And then it gets its belly packed with ice when it's down there, and they get layers. You know, you stack them up, and they have, there's little bin boards to separate them all. So it's, you know, in that sense, it's not very high-tech at all. That's one about the oldest ways to keep fish fresh, you know, but it works. It's,
so
it's worked for a long time.
You have to make sure you have ice.
Yeah, I take about 1,100 to 1,200 pounds of ice. It's not very much. My, my boat, when it's full, it basically holds, like, you know, if you see a big fish toad at the fish plant, my boat holds enough fish to fill one of those.
Wow. So you can't stay out very long before you need to come back.
I've made some 4-day trips. I've made a couple trips where I'm coming in on the fifth day, but just because the fishing's slow, you know. And depending on the species, sometimes if there's a lot of coho salmon around, they're smaller and you can fit more of them in. So if you're only catching 40 or 50, 60 a day, it takes longer.
So I know, and you mentioned salmon, but are there other fish that you catch? What are
I do. I do. There's an open access lingcod fishery that I participate in.
Okay.
Inside of state waters, that's it's fairly limited in the amount of fish I can catch. It's pretty structured as far as the quotas go. They're pretty. It's for the I don't know what it's going to be this year. I'm assuming it's going to be the same 400 pounds a month.
Yeah.
It's been for the last, I don't know how many years now, but it's been quite a while.
Yeah.
And I do that because it's a steady thing. The salmon, sometimes they're not, either they're not around in abundance or the weather might not be ideal for my little boat. And the salmon move sometimes to, you know, they can be in a totally different spot from where you were. The cod, it's nice to go get those because they stay on the reefs. They stay near the rock structure. It's easy. You can just drive to where you know there's a pile of rocks under the water and you're, you know, they don't really stray too far from that. The salmon, they go kind of willy-nilly everywhere, you know.
So sort of where do you go? I mean, how far out do you go?
Well, I've made tuna trips with my boat where I've been 60 miles off the coast, but it, being such a small boat and you can only hold so much, there's not really any, you know, there's no reason to run much farther than that. Yeah. You can catch, like, my boat holds about 75 or 80 tuna. Doesn't take very much. You know, and the salmon are, they're closer. Sometimes they can be, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 miles, 9, 10 miles offshore, sometimes closer.
And so do you fish year-round?
Well, I do fish year-round, but my boat only fishes during the summer.
Okay.
I go and crew for other people during the wintertime in the Dungeness crab fishery here, which we actually, the boat I was working on, we just got finished here 3 weeks ago.
Wow. So I heard, Garth, I heard you speaking at a recent gathering of farmers and fishermen, and you were talking about some of the challenges that you face as an independent fisherman trying to get your fish to market. And I confess that I was really kind of shocked to hear about some of the things that you have to go through to sell your fish. And I don't know if you could talk to a little bit about that. I mean, it seemed like...
Well, I can sell my fish to the different seafood buyers, you know, which I'm sure Mark's familiar with some of, you know, there's... You know, Pacific Coast, and there's Borensteins, and there's West Bay Marketing, and there's Fish Hawk. There's a bunch of buyers around here.
But if you want to sell directly to customers, like,
I
want to come
have
and
the
buy
license.
A fish
I'm
for you.
Licensed by the state of Oregon. I have what's called a limited fish seller's permit, which allows me to sell to the end consumer, which the state considers restaurants and individuals to be the end consumer. Those sales have to be made by me in person, off my boat.
So you can't deliver, for instance,
fish? There's no delivery. There's no selling you a fillet. You have to buy a whole fish.
And I have to come down to your
you
boat.
You have to come down to the boat. You can walk off the boat with the fish and take it up to the fillet table. And there's usually, I fillet people's fish for them for free.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other people up there that fillet fish as well. But I don't always do that. If the price is high at the fish market, you know, if they're paying $7 or $8 a pound for king salmon, it's pretty tough to sit there and sell off the dock.
Yeah. You know? And so, how do you let people know when you've got
I have a little flyer. I have some word of mouth. I have a list of people on my telephone. I make like a group call or a group text message. I just recently got an email account hooked back up. So
that's great.
And I actually, Mark, I'm really curious. You're also a recreational fisherman, aren't you?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And where do you launch out of?
Well, usually out of Hammond, the West Mooring Basin down here. I'm renting a house right now, and fortunately, it came with a boat slip.
Oh, how nice!
And I was surprised to hear Garth had a 28 footer. Well, mine isn't. You know, mine's a 21 footer. So I realize how small even a 28 footer is. When you get out in the ocean, it doesn't seem like much. And
yeah, especially with the weather the way it is right now.
Right. And I like, you know, I mostly fish down here out in front during the Buoy 10 fishery. Started spring Chinook fishing the last 4 years. And, of course, got into that when I saw how great the quality was and found out they weren't impossible to catch. You could catch them occasionally.
Oh, they are wonderful. And aren't they just starting to run right now? Is that?
Yeah, I was just talking to a guy in the over at the Seafood Lab, and he had just heard of a guy who picked up two yesterday out here in the river.
Wow.
I won't say exactly where it was.
Okay.
My friends will be mad at me.
Well, we are about ready to take a break. You are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, and KTCB Tillamook 89.5, and streaming live at coastradio.org.
I know that Mark and Kristen both, I want you to talk about the class that's coming up that's being taught, and I believe it's later on this month in March, and
right.
It's all about preserving seafood, or am I getting this right? I know Kristen was telling me a little bit about it, and I definitely want to try and take it, because I confess that when I moved to this area, it had never occurred to me that you could can your own tuna. I don't know why I never thought that, but I was flabbergasted that people were canning their own tuna. It was the coolest thing in the world, and now I'm realizing there's all these other things you can do to preserve fish, and I think...
Yeah, and we did have a canning workshop in the fall. This one is going to focus on smoking and pickling fish. It's going to be a two-day workshop, and you know, part of it is the pickling process. It, you know, you can't really do the whole thing in 2 days, but we'll start, and I'll have some fish pre-salted, and we'll just go through some of the theory behind smoking and pickling, but. Not a lot of theory. It'll mostly be hands-on. We'll actually go through the process, and I'll hand out recipes to make a brine for pickling, and then we'll go through the complete process for smoking fish. The first day we'll prepare a brine and talk about a couple of different brine techniques, and they'll get a sample recipe to work with. And we'll let it brine overnight, and the next day we'll come back and go ahead and smoke it. The participants will have to come back because it's probably not going to be completely done in the 3 or 4 hours of the class. But
and you're using like home smokers, right?
I mean, yeah, we're going to use Little Chiefs since they're relatively inexpensive and they're accessible. So we have a couple of Little Chiefs that we have for this class. We're going to be working with salmon, albacore. I think we have several different types of salmon. Spring Chinook, summer Chinook. No, we don't have spring Chinook. We have summer Chinook and fall Chinook.
And you're going to be teaching people how to make some brines too, right?
We'll prepare and we'll have recipes to hand out, but we'll make the brines for both the smoked fish and for the pickled fish.
Are there any types of fish that lend themselves more to one process or the other? I mean, you don't really hear about smoked tuna and so much. Or do people smoke tuna? I don't know. Is it...
Yeah.
I mean, I just always think of smoked fish as smoked herring or smoked salmon. Do those processes lend themselves to all fish?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, like Garth said, tuna. You know, tuna smokes very well. It's a little drier fish occasionally than salmon, Black cod is one that hardly anybody ever works with. It's a tremendous fish, smoked. It's incredibly.
It's really good pickled too.
Is it
abundant around here? Is it easy?
But you're not going to see it mostly in the market. You're not going to.
Yeah.
You know, Mark's right. People don't use it very often because they don't have access to it. Most of it goes to the Asian markets, and there's not a big demand domestically.
For black cod.
For black cod. Some people don't like it. American consumers don't like real oily fish.
Oily fish?
Yeah. Mark's probably real familiar with all of this stuff. Yeah. But the reality is that most Americans want something that's like tuna, halibut, cod.
Okay.
They want the blander fish. There's even lots of American consumers that don't like salmon, you know, just because it's got some fish-like flavor to it. And black cod has a lot of fish oil in it. So it has a real... You know, a baked fillet of black cod is going to be a...
You know you're eating fish.
Yeah.
I mean,
but when you smoke it, it's a different animal.
Well,
and when you pickle it, it's really different.
Yeah, I mean, like Garth said, you know, some of the best pickled fish, I think, is the oily fish. Like herring, of course, is what pretty much everybody is familiar with pickled herring.
I have to say, I grew up having to eat pickled herring. It's a German family tradition on New Year's Eve, and it was just the most horrifyingly gross thing for me. I had these traumatic experiences of choking down pickled herring. But it wasn't until I came here and I had some really well-done pickled herring, and I realized... Oh, hey, this could not be a traumatic experience for me. I could actually like this.
Well,
I mean, my family was shocked.
Same difference between like home canned albacore and buying a...
It is so different.
Oh, it is.
Canned from Safeway.
Exactly.
It's a different animal if you open up side by side. One looks like cat food and one looks like something you really want to eat. Yes.
Well, and once you've tried it, I mean, I think you'll just never go back. It's such an amazing experience. We were fortunate enough to take Mark's class and it was just amazing. And the spring Chinook canned salmon is... truly amazing. It's just absolutely delicious.
And these don't seem like really complicated techniques once you get them under your belt. Obviously, there's some food safety issues there that you want to be aware of. But once you know how to do it, I mean, the raw resources are fairly abundant here if you know where to look.
Yeah. No, the pickling process is really straightforward. The smoked salmon process, the final product can, you know, vary tremendously on your technique and how you do it. And, you know, we'll talk about what's required for a commercial process, but I mean, the reality is at home, you don't necessarily have to achieve the same type of finished product if you're just going to eat it in a couple of days or freeze it and eat it as soon as it's thawed out. But we'll cover all the basics of it.
Do you want to tell people the dates for that and the cost? And do you know all of that?
The dates for the class is March 23rd and March 24th.
Yeah.
I think that's a Wednesday and Thursday. What is the cost
$50.
Of the class?
It's $50 for a two-night class. The class is going to run from 6 to 10.
There you go.
And it's down in Seaside, isn't it?
Yeah, it's at the James Beard Culinary Arts Kitchen in Seaside High School. It's a fabulous kitchen.
Yeah, and that's where we had the canning workshop. It is a really good kitchen.
So if people want more information about that, who do they contact? Do they contact you, Kristen, or Mark?
Actually, I think they can go through Clatsop Community College, and they can just call the college, and it's actually, I believe, in the catalog that just came out, so they can sign up for it there, too.
Okay, great. Yeah,
but I think we are going to limit it to 20 people, so... If people are interested, get their reservations in.
I need to learn how to make my own pickled herring.
Yeah, in fact, I may try to get some fresh herring. In fact, maybe Garth can give me some tips. I know Newport has some, but for sure we'll do salmon. I grew up, when I was in graduate school, I was pretty much, just because I had access to hatchery trout, I was doing trout. But, you know, like Garth said, I prefer the oilier fish and salmon and, of course, I've never tried black cod, but I think I may try that.
Yeah, I think smoked black cod is really one of life's true treasures. It's so wonderful.
Yeah, the problem with black cod is I can't catch them myself since they're so deep. And
And it is
hard.
Do
you catch them, Garth?
I don't. I've caught probably since the whole time, you know, trolling, the type of fishing I do, maybe four or five.
Yeah.
You know, it's really... really odd for them to be up in the water column.
You know, so you would catch them accidentally? I mean, you wouldn't be intending to catch them?
Yeah, in the odd time when they're up higher off the bottom. Usually they're, you know, they're a bottom fish.
Okay.
So they're near the bottom. But they do come up in the water column sometimes, just like halibut will. Other bottom fish will as well.
So
they will bite your lures, but it's pretty rare.
How deep are we talking?
Well,
500 and 600 feet.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you're talking 100 fathoms or better. You know, they move inside of that, but the way things are set up now, they have what's called the Rockfish Conservation Area, mm-hmm. where most of that stuff, they pushed it, you have to go outside of, there's a huge, I mean, it's, well, it stretches from the Canadian border to the Mexican border, and it's the biggest marine reserve in the world, square footage-wise, right now. And it's, you have to either transit across that, or you have to fish inside of it.
Okay.
And the way it's set up, it's basically not feasible for a boat my size to go target those, even though there is, it's like 700 or 800 pounds a week open access. Yeah. So it would be conceivably, you know, like versus doing my lingcod thing, it would be more worth more money, but it's not a feasible fishery for my boat to participate mm-hmm. in, because you either need long line gear, lots of hooks, lots of bait, lots of space on the deck.
Are they a big fish?
They can be. I mean, yeah, you catch 15, 16, 20 pounders sometimes.
Wow.
They're, you know, between 7, 8, 9, 10, sometimes smaller, you know. Mm-hmm. But they're mostly sending them overseas.
Okay.
People like to make soup out of them.
Okay, so I have to ask you guys both.
The whole fish.
What is the largest fish you've ever caught?
I caught a 42-pound king salmon dressed.
Wow.
That's no guts or gills.
Wow. All right, Mark.
Well, can I fib just a little? I mean, I think the largest was probably
that's
just...
traditional for fishermen, isn't it?
Yeah, it's probably like 32, 33-pound Chinook.
It was a Chinook.
Yeah.
Wow. So how old is a fish that's...
Either 4 or 5 years.
Yeah,
right there.
And I think the difference in the actual size of them has more to do with, like, their genetic stock, like which mm-hmm. Some of the river systems they have to travel farther up, and then the ocean conditions. You know, if there was there enough feed to make them really, really yeah. fat, or did they just get so-so,
yeah.
you know? And it does depend. I've had seasons or, you know, experienced seasons where there is a bigger size to the fish just on average, you know?
And that may have something to do with ocean conditions, if there's more
of yeah, like I said, either ocean conditions or also when you're trolling out in the ocean, you're interacting with all these salmon that are transiting up and down the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, even though we're trolling, you know, within this area that's kind of near the Columbia River,
yeah.
a lot of the fish that we're catching and interacting with they're from the Sacramento, they're from the Rogue, they're from the Klamath, they're from all these other river systems. So depending on which ones are there, when you're yeah. there, you could be on, you know, a completely different body of fish or tail end of a body, or, you know, it's constantly in flux. There's yeah. no... That is one of the things that's nice about the cod fishing.
Yeah.
And, the friends of mine that do go and do the open access black cod, that's what, you know, it's yeah. kind of a nice, steady thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the bottom. You put bait down. They bite.
Well, Mark, I have a question about, I'm part Norwegian, so do you know anything about making lutefisk?
No.
Well,
I always heard really strange things about lutefisk. I've never tried it, and I feel badly about that, because I think living in Astoria, I'm supposed to have tried it.
I'm sure that's...
I think you should
I've
ask
heard, I've heard strong pros and cons.
I don't know anything about lutefisk.
No?
I'm French and a whole mixture of stuff. Oh. No Norwegian.
Nope. It seems like we should... I mean, it must be something like other pickled fish or preserved fish, where if you know how to make it right, it'd be really great.
Yeah,
I
don't know.
People seem to either love it or hate it.
Yeah, my family doctor for years, he was Swedish, and he said it was pretty stinky. And,
So it's actually preserved how? Do you know anything about it?
I really don't. I think it's heavily salted, but I'm
yeah, there's
sure.
There's some preserving methods culturally around the world in different places that are, you know, to the average American palate are unpalatable.
I can
imagine. Since we're talking about fish recipes, I'm wondering if you guys can both share a favorite fish recipe and a type of fish.
My favorite fish recipe is probably just a real simple fish taco with corn tortillas, some lingcod or halibut, you know, just lightly sauteed up, smaller pieces of it cut up, and maybe a little garlic and some fresh cilantro or something, a little bit of hot sauce.
Oh,
tiny bit of
great.
Cheese, not very much.
Nice. How about you, Mark?
Probably I like all my fish just barely cooked to keep it in, you know, as moist as possible. I just don't like fish dried out. But as far as a recipe, it'd probably just be albacore that's pan-seared, kind of like what you get in the restaurant when you order blackened ahi or mm-hmm. pan-seared ahi. Mm-hmm. I just do it with albacore. The only way I can get it right is to take it outside with a hot iron skillet. You can coat it with a few spices and then a tiny bit of oil, and then just get that pan red hot and just sear both sides.
When you say take it outside, are you doing it on a grill?
No, you take your... I'm usually using a camp stove because the fumes that come off it, you really pretty much need a fume hood.
So this is not a winter dish?
No, no, we do it in the winter, but, yeah. You know, it's if you get it hot enough to do it right, yeah. It puts out some pretty heavy smoke, and you don't want it in your house, but... And you want to do it, you kind of want to get it, it's kind of an art to get it to a point where you get it raw halfway in the, you know, in
right,
the middle.
Right.
And then kind of a wasabi dressing with it or just straight, but when it's done right, it just melts in your mouth. That albacore seared, and then it's very buttery, much buttery than ahi.
That sounds fantastic. Well, Garth, before we close, I want you to give everybody your email contact. Is there a way for people to find you?
Sure. It's lowercase g portier, P-O-R-T-E-U-R, @gmail.com.
And is there a phone number they could call
yeah,
if they want to know?
Yeah, it's 541-297-2812. And like I said, my salmon fishery and the mm-hmm. lingcod thing doesn't start up until later.
Okay.
So May, like, April, May. Yeah. They don't actually tell us what the salmon season is going to be until it's supposed to happen. So.
Okay.
And Mark, if people were interested in getting some of their seafood products out to market, can't they contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm over at the Seafood Lab, room uh-huh. 112, first floor. It's kind of like the basement. Come in the front door and go downstairs. My office is the first one on the left. And, you know, we have a pilot plant there, and we can do startup development and even do some pilot plant scale up with canning, smoking. You know, we have a small scale commercial smoker there, and we have a small commercial retort. And I have a can seamer, and we do a lot of work with flexible retorted pouches.
So they can call OSU Extension probably and reach you?
Yeah, I can be reached at Extension.
Okay, 503?
503-338-4485. That's my direct line.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you for listening. Thank you both, Garth and Mark.
So much for coming on.
Yeah, joining us today on Food Talk. It's really interesting. I've learned a lot. And thank you to all of you for joining us on today's Food Talk. We've had fresh conversations about local food on the North Coast.
This show will be available as a podcast at coastradio.org and can be heard this evening at 8:30 p.m. on KCPB 90.9 FM.